Have you ever been home alone but have the feeling that something or someone is watching you? Or when you're just about to go to sleep and you get a chill down your spine? Maybe you even hear something like footsteps or a faint voice. And then the question starts to nag at you. Is something else here that you just can't see? Could it be something otherworldly? Today, for a haunting Halloween show, we're talking about ghosts, spirits, and the other side. Nearly half of Americans believe in ghosts, and spirits are seen in just about every culture. Their existence permeates books, movies, and folklore. But what would you do if you were faced with the existence of something you couldn't explain? You're listening to the 1A Podcast. I'm Jonathan Hill, sitting in for Jen White. Remember, to join future conversations, download our 1A Vox Pop app and leave us a voicemail.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A. This message comes from Capital One. With the Capital One Venture Card, you earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day. And you can use those miles toward travel expenses like flights, hotels, rental cars, and more. Just book and pay for your travel using your Venture Card and redeem your miles toward the cost. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Credit approval required. Capital One Bank, USANA.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
What would you do if you were faced with the existence of something you couldn't explain? If you're Glenn Washington, you might just grab a microphone. Glenn is the host and the crypt keeper of the podcast Spooked, presented by Snap Judgment. And he joins us now to share some of his favorite ghost stories. Glenn, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Glenn, what got you interested in the paranormal in the first place?
I grew up in a fundamentalist Christian culture where demons and ghosts and spirits and angels and everything else were real. And to think that these things weren't there, that just wasn't part of my background when I was younger. But even as I grew older, I still had experiences after even rejecting the belief system kind of that even spawned them for me, had experiences that I couldn't explain. And traveling around the world, you see these things come up again and again and again in different ways and different aspects. And it's always been fascinating to me.
So at the beginning of each episode of the Spooked podcast, you tell a supernatural story of your own. And so you have obviously quite a few. Which one of your own experiences sticks with you the most?
Well, I want to push back on you a little bit there. Mm-hmm. I talk about wonder at the beginning of the show. And there are so many things that, in fact, inspire that in me. Are they supernatural? Maybe. Maybe not. And that's the whole deal. I don't have to come up with some kind of answers for this. I don't know. I don't know how the world works more than anybody else does. But when I talk to someone on the Spook Show, you know, we're logical people here. This is an NPR show. Ghosts and demons and all this other kind of stuff. This is the world we live in. And what I want to do with Spooked is have you listen to someone and let them tell their stories. Not somebody that's got a bunch of bangles on, crystals and stuff on their head. This guy's a cop. This person's a construction worker. He works at a bar. Someone who doesn't want to tell their story. someone who says, you know, I never told this to anyone before, but those are the people who animate Spooked. And what we're trying to do is just say, maybe, just say you don't believe in all this stuff, but you don't believe they're lying either.
Mm.
What, keep those things in your head.
What do you think it is about us as people that we want to seek an explanation for things we can't explain?
That's what we do. That's what people are. We're meaning factories. If I tell you a story about anything, about my mama, you're going to think about yours. What does it mean? What does it mean? What does this story mean? And that's, and I think that's our, that's part of, that's just part of being human. And these stories, this is what's interesting to me so much about these stories. In our culture, we don't have a place where we can talk about the things that actually matter. What happens when we die? Where did Granny go? These big, big questions. What's the world made of? What am I supposed to do? Who am I? We don't talk about that stuff. And it's amazing to me that the place where these real questions come out about this mystery that we're made of, whatever you believe or anything like that, this, we are a wonder. This is still, whatever it is you believe, this is a type of magic that we exist on this planet. And so...
Glenn, let's get into some of the stories from Spooked. A Friend in the Forest is this really terrifying story about a little boy who makes a friend. And at first, people aren't sure if he's real. They think he might be imaginary, but he calls his friend Thomas. And that story is told by Shane Dunphy, who was a teacher and social worker at the time, and it starts when a concerned mom reaches out about her son, Gregory. Can you give us a little more background on that story?
Yes. Shane, as you mentioned, is a social worker who's brought in to talk to this kid, to help him out. His mother is working three jobs. He thinks, you know, he's looking for a pedestrian problem, and he thinks he's found one. But this kid is having some sort of communication with someone outside the home, and his mother wants it stopped. The teachers want it stopped, and he is there to make sure that happens.
Here's a clip from that episode of Friend of the Forest when Shane finally comes face to face with that mysterious little boy.
But there was still part of me that wanted to help this kid. Here he was. He was standing right in front of me. And he looked like a boy. I held out my hand. I said, come on, come with us. You know, we can talk about whatever's going on. As I said that, something crossed his face. I don't know whether it was a look of fear or a look of anger or a look of uncertainty, but it was like a rope had been tied around his waist and suddenly it had been pulled back through the trees.
Glenn, there are so many little creepy details in this story. I mean, the boy likes things from the 80s. It's kind of like, wait, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense with the timing of this story. And it's later confirmed when they find the home of this little boy in the forest. What about this story sticks out for you?
At our best, Spooked tries to be immersive and to really put you in someone else's world, to let you see the world through their eyes. And I think the way that Shane unfolds the story, you feel that you're right there with him. And the thing for us is the show is not about, you know, Granny saw a ghost in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
The show is about people who have a long-term interaction with something they can't explain. You're going to be a different person than you were at the end of a piece than you were at the beginning. Our people go through a transformation. These are stories that mean something to them. And it's because everybody has a different type of monster. Everybody does. You're depending on your culture, your background, your gender. Your monster is going to be different. And what changes you, what you see, is going to be different because of it.
How do you think hearing scary stories is different from reading them or watching a scary movie?
I just think the same thing. If we do our job right, we're dropping you into someone else's world. And the production team the sound team on Spooked are made of magic. And we've been given a gift in these past 10 years that there's this kind of headphones nation mm-hmm. where people put on their headphones to escape, to go into their own little world, even if they're in the crowd of thousands. And that gift, that sort of that sonic transportation device is that's our clay. That's our playground.
How do you all find the stories for Spooked?
A team that just goes around the world, literally, looking for stories that, I'm not going to be able to necessarily verify the whatever came out of the bathroom or something like that. But we're looking for stories that we can track down the people that the places, the things that happened. Oftentimes, the stories have multiple people describing the same event. These stories are hard to find, but again, I got a team made of magic that runs around the globe looking for stories that they think that can push the envelope a little bit, that can give people a little bit more understanding that things are not quite as they seem.
Let's listen to a clip where Ray talks about how his friend led him to a house that was partially burned down.
I felt compelled to walk inside the house, but the kid wasn't walking with me. He stayed outside. I was having that feeling that I needed to go forward inside the house, and that the steps are falling apart and the ceilings collapse. The boards are wobbly and they're making creaky sounds, and the building is so unstable. But when I get up the steps, the way the light came in from the ceiling, I see the pigeons. And I know immediately, these are rollers. These are rollers. They're rollers up here. And I'm not afraid anymore. And not only are there rollers, this is a couple, and they've got squabs of baby pigeons. I get the pigeons, babies and all, which was quite difficult, because they were flapping like crazy. And, I'm 12 years old. I'm trying to press them to my chest. I started cooing at them, coo, coo, which is something we would do to try to calm pigeons down. And it worked. And they stopped trying to flap and struggle with me. When I come outside of the house with the pigeons pressed against my chest, they're flapping, going crazy. I want him to see this. This is amazing. And, he's not there when I come out. What he wanted me to have was those rollers. He knew I spoke about rollers all the time when we talked about pigeons, if I had rollers. I never saw him again. When his babies were ready to be passed on, he was ready to pass on.
Glenn, the end of that clip suggests that this was a spirit who was ready to move on, and that's sort of a theme we're hearing from you all as well. Susan posted on Facebook, "In 1998, I broke up with Kay after a long relationship. Years later, I was dating someone else and invited him to my parents' farmhouse for dinner. After dinner, the smell of flowers suddenly flooded the room. I thought maybe my nose was misinterpreting some weird smells, so I asked him if he noticed anything odd, and he said, 'You mean the room full of flowers?' 2 weeks later, I received a phone call from a friend who apologized at being slow to express her condolences. Kay died 2 weeks prior. I hadn't known. Evidently, the haunting was a final goodbye from Kay, who had picked gardenias for me as we walked by his neighbor's hedge." Glenn, after hearing so many stories about the supernatural or just unexplained events, how do you make sense of these experiences?
I don't. I'm thankful that I don't have to. What we want to do is give people a forum to tell the stories that matter to them. Speak about how they were touched, how these visitations happened. I love that. I don't have to say this is what it means and or anything like that. Like, what happened and get out. Greatest job in the world.
Why do you think people like to hear spooky stories?
I think that we all have a feeling that we are not seeing everything there is, that there is something behind the curtain. And we, you know, we all have different words for what that might be. But I think this whole, any aspect of the paranormal is you're just trying to get a little bit of a glimpse over the mountain. You're trying to see a little something that of that hidden world. And there is a hidden world. However, whatever your belief system is, we can all be agreed that there are things that we do not see and things that we don't understand. I think that it's so interesting right now that when we're in this sort of scientific explosion, that we, you know, we can talk about twin particles being connected on different sides of the universe by a force that we do not understand. And that gives us, I think, a type of license to say, you know what? If you can't explain something as fundamental to the building block of the of creation as that, then I'm going to just listen to these stories and see if I can make my own map of the universe.
Could you tell us one of your stories?
Oh, of course. My stories, one of the stories that really, the impact of everything I've done since is when I was a kid, we had just purchased a new trailer home that was on 88 acres of Michigan swampland. And we had spent every single thing that we had to get this place out there. And the guys come up, there's a bunch of farmers come out to welcome the new black neighbors. And this guy with a clipboard, and he's checking things off, and he's telling my father, he's like, Bill, you're going to have to get some water out here. More important than sewer, more important than electricity is water. And my father's like, this is supposed to be all-inclusive. He's like, nah, that's not what all-inclusive means. And so, because you have to dig for water. And they bring out this guy with his drilling equipment. And he starts drilling and understand. We know, I'm a little kid. I know that every single time he drills, that's money we don't have. Mm. And all the farmers know that's money we do not have. Man sets up this ancient drilling equipment, sets it going, whew, nothing. Moves it. Everyone's trying to shout where to put it. Moves it, puts it somewhere else. Nothing. And you see this panic in my father's face. One more drill, nothing. And finally they call this guy, Kriegel. And Kriegel comes out and he's got this John Deere cap and he's got with this dance like nobody else. And he's like, I hear y'all need a well with you. And this word, again, I'm from a fundamentalist Christian background, witching. That's not something we're supposed to mess with, but we're desperate. Mm. We're desperate. And my father gives the nod. The man goes and he strips a sapling until he's like, it's like a letter Y. He's holding two ends with like one end of it pointing out in front of him. And he's like, we're going to get you that water now. We're going to get you that water. And he starts waving it around like it is like a dog's nose. And she's calling for here, water. Come here, water. Come here, water. Here, water. Where you at, water? Come here. Here, water. Come here. Here, water. Where you at, water? And he walks over to a spot, and I swear this stick dives down out of his hand. That's where your water is. And I can't believe what I'm seeing. And he looks at me. He's like, come here. Come here. Now, there's certain things you can't teach. Either you got it or you don't. And he says, he puts the stick in my hand. And he's like, you go ahead. You call for it. And I'm like, come here, water. You call for that water. Scream for it. Here, water. Here, water. Come here, water. And I'm walking around with this stick. And at one point, it dives down so fast that the bark strips off in my hand. Mm. And we eventually do drill right there. Water. Clean, cold, delicious water. And that night, my sleeping in the bed in our brand new trailer next to my brother. My father burst into my room. And he's shouting and he's screaming. He's like, "We have drank the devil's water. We've drunk the devil's water and we're going to pay. And we have to pray right now or we're all going to be in eternal darkness." And that's what we do. My entire family gets on their knees and we pray. And we pray and we pray and we pray. And when the sun comes up in the morning, you see those rays of sunshine poking through the trees. We cry and we weep and we hug and we, together as a family, are so thankful that we're forgiven for drinking the devil's water.
Wow. Glenn Washington is the host of the podcast Spooked. You can listen on the Luminary channel on Apple Podcasts or on the Luminary app. If you want your spooky fix even after Halloween, the current season of Spooked will continue until spring 2022. Glenn, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be back with more in just a moment. A reminder, to have your questions answered on future topics, or just to let us know what you think, tweet us at 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp, a truly affordable online counseling service. Fill out a questionnaire online and get matched with a licensed counselor best suited to your mental health needs. Whether it's depression, anxiety, or trauma, BetterHelp will help you overcome what stands in the way of your happiness. Learn more at BetterHelp.com and get 10% off your first month with promo code 1A. BetterHelp. Get help anytime, anywhere.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
Now let's turn to Professor Chris French. He's the head of the Animalistic Psychology Research Unit at Goldsmiths University of London. He's also author of the forthcoming book, The Science of Weird Stuff. The word isn't actually stuff, but we can't say it on air. Chris, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
My pleasure.
Chris, you study animalistic psychology. What does that mean?
It is essentially the psychology of weird stuff. You know, I'm interested in the kind of weird experiences that people definitely do have. The question is kind of how you best explain them or interpret them. So it's everything from kind of alien abduction claims to zombies, the whole A to Z. But of course, at this time of the year, then it tends to be a lot of interesting ghosts. And so there's a whole psychology there that's fascinating.
What's your own relationship with the paranormal? Do you believe or are you more of a skeptic?
Oh, I'm afraid I'm a total skeptic now, but I didn't used to be. Kind of well into early adulthood, I kind of believed in a lot of this stuff. And it was only by kind of the more I kind of realized how our own minds can kind of trick us, the more skeptical I became. So now I am, yes, I'm a card-carrying skeptic now, but as a kid, I was absolutely terrified of ghosts.
So how do you approach the topic of ghosts? How do you research a ghost? How does that even work?
Right. I mean, it's a very good point because, of course, in science, what you want to do ideally is to be able to kind of study things under properly controlled conditions, ideally in a laboratory. And that's just not the way that ghosts work. So what you can do is think about what possible alternative explanations there might be. This doesn't prove that any non-paranormal explanations can account for the whole gamut of claims in this area. But we can look at things, for example, like the unreliability of eyewitness testimony. And we can even do it in a kind of spooky, anomalistic context. And we can show, for example, that there's a whole series of studies going back to the Victorian era, even, which is the kind of heyday of seances where people would try to call up spirits. And the very, very first study of the unreliability of eyewitness testimony, which is a huge topic within psychology, but the very first study was done way back then by a guy who had been to seances and initially thought it was all genuine. He thought that it really was spirits. It was a whole supernatural thing. And then realized that all these effects could be achieved by trickery. And so he practiced the tricks himself invited people along to take part in his faked seance. But what he did was to get them to write down in detail everything they had witnessed as accurately as they could. And that was really revealing because people misremembered things. They remembered things in the wrong order. They said things had happened that hadn't, and things hadn't happened that had, and so on and so forth. And so this is a hugely important point, that whenever someone gives you their paranormal anecdote, they may well be 100% honest and sincere, but it doesn't necessarily mean that what they said really was what happened.
Chris, quickly, what are factors that normally play into those kinds of reports?
I say for me, the two biggest are probably kind of context and your prior belief. So you're much more likely to report some kind of ghostly experience. And by that, I should be clear that usually when we talk about ghosts, I think people often kind of summon up an image of some kind of translucent figure coming through the wall. But actually, it's far more often things like a sense of presence or a shiver down the spine or thinking you're hearing a voice or footsteps, that kind of thing. Well, I think an important one is context. So I think probably we've all had the experience, if we've been shown around some kind of very old building, if someone says, oh, and this room is supposed to be haunted, then the moment you enter that room, your whole mental set changes. You kind of maybe notice noise, little noises that you wouldn't necessarily have noticed otherwise. You kind of feel slightly more on edge and so on and so forth. And people have looked at this in kind of properly controlled studies where if you ask a group of people, for example, to walk around a disused cinema, and one group are told that it's just being renovated, the other group are told that paranormal activity has been reported there, even though it hasn't, the group that are told that there's been paranormal activity will report more of these kind of anomalous sensations, like a sense of presence or a change in temperature and so on and so forth. So context is important, and also prior belief. If you already believe in ghosts, you are much more likely to have those kinds of experiences than somebody who doesn't.
And then we also got this voicemail from one of the producers of this show.
This is Michelle from Philadelphia. A couple weeks ago, I was attempting to take a nap, and I heard a man's voice in my bedroom. And my bedroom is below ground, so it's pretty quiet. And I haven't heard that since. But that night, I had a sleep paralysis dream of a spirit in my room, basically terrorizing me. But I was aware I was in my bedroom and could see my bedroom around me, but also was hallucinating, auditory and visual hallucinations. So yeah, it was absolutely terrifying. And I couldn't sleep in my bedroom for a couple days after that.
Okay, Chris, I'm personally really glad we're talking about this because I suffer from sleep paralysis and it is horrifying and spooky and scary and I hate it and I want it to stop. Please give me a science reason and tell me how to make this stop.
Well, to answer the second part first, they're really, and this is one thing that really annoys me, we've tried to get funding to really look at this properly. In terms of what are the best strategies that people can adopt to try to deal with sleep paralysis. I mean, and what that would involve is a kind of two parts. One is trying to reduce the frequency of sleep paralysis episodes. And really, we can be pretty sure there are some tips I can give you. Don't sleep on your back. You're much more likely to have an attack if you sleep on your back. Good sleep hygiene. So go to bed at a regular time, get up at a regular time, try to avoid anything that might interfere with your sleep pattern. So, you know, too much alcohol late at night or caffeine and so on and so forth. That should help to kind of reduce the actual incidence. But then people say, yes, but I know when it's happening that it's sleep paralysis, but it still terrifies me. How can I cope with that? And people try different things. I mean, the usual thing is to kind of just summon up as much willpower as you can and try to move a little finger or a toe or something, and that will break the spell. Some people learn to actually enjoy it, believe it or not. They treat it as if they're kind of just watching a really immersive horror movie.
Oh, no.
And other people say, there's no way I could do that. There's no way. So, you know, we do need more research on that. Interestingly, I was having a conversation with one of my postgrads earlier today, And she wants to look at the effects of different kind of belief systems, whether there is a difference between the religious and the non-religious person in terms of how they interpret what's going on, and whether they can adopt different strategies and how effective they are, and even differences between religions. Because you can certainly look throughout different cultures and find that, you know, what happens during sleep paralysis tends to be interpreted within that belief system. Mm. So in some cultures they'll interpret it as being a djinn, in others it's a ghost or it's a demon, and so on. I wish I could give you more advice on that. I really genuinely do, because it's one of my favourite topics. I really sympathise with people, those poor unfortunate people who get vivid sleep paralysis on a regular basis.
So throughout your career, what have you experienced that you can't explain?
Well, for one thing, is I wouldn't claim to be able to explain absolutely every claim that's ever put before me. I mean, that'd be far too presumptuous. I've certainly had experiences myself that if I believe in the paranormal, I would probably interpret as being paranormal. But now I feel that sometimes I've got better alternative explanations. I mean, I've had sleep paralysis, for example. As a student, before I even became a skeptic, we would kind of sometimes, like a lot of teenage and young adults, play around with a Ouija board.
Oh no!
And I can confirm that it feels as if that glass or the planchette is moving on its own. I would now explain that in terms of what's called the ideomotor effect. It's basically it's non-conscious muscular movements. People are moving the glass, even though they're not aware of it. It's the same explanation that I would apply to the dowsing example that we heard in the first part of the program today. Again, it's the ideomotor effect.
Well, messing with a Ouija board, you are braver than me. Professor Chris French is the head of Anomalistic Psychology Research Unit at Goldsmiths University of London. He's also author of the forthcoming book, The Science of Weird Stuff. Except the word stuff is a little more adult in the actual title. Chris, thanks for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
Today's producer was Michelle Harvin. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jonquilin Hill. Let's talk more soon. This is 1A. We'll be right back.